obsessed.
Oh, this is not at all slightly so. Jesus Christ. I'm here with James from Roll Britannia.
Hi.
Hi. Live play D&D podcast, and we were just, it's a lot more professional than this is. So we have a song that my friend made, and then it's just me and Laurie yelling at each other. So that's kind of it. That's the whole premise of the podcast.
I've heard it. Let's...
Yeah. So James and I met over Twitter, which I'm still very new to the Twitter world. I don't understand most of it. And then I binged the entire, 35 episodes or something of your...
I think it was about 29 episodes back then, but yeah.
Yeah, something ridiculous within the first few days, because I really miss playing D&D.
I can see why. I mean, I'd never played it before we started the podcast.
That still trips me out. So only one of you played before the podcast, and you just went, yeah, let's just do this. Is that because you just wanted to start a podcast, or you wanted to play D&D and it just happened that way?
It was a bit of both, really. Mostly it was something to keep saying during lockdown, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting. So if I cut it out, or if you missed it earlier, James is actually in the UK. So right now it's about, 8 o'clock at night for you? Something like that?
Yeah,
I think it's 11 hours difference. Yeah, and I just woke up. I'm still wearing my pajama shirt. It's like, I'm not getting changed. Your story, don't tell me what it is just yet, but are you doing like a hometown, like a personal connection one, or are you doing one that your wife gave you? Because I didn't find this out till afterwards, and I'm kind of upset about it. James's wife is a criminologist.
Yeah, no, she is, yeah. Well, she gave me some advice. She gave me some advice, gave me some sort of pointers, and gave me a bit of a story to go with. So there were a few that I was looking at that were kind of local stories. I mean, to give you some that I haven't done, I had a bit of a personal connection with the Joanna Denahay serial killer out in it was 2013, because I was actually working in Cambridgeshire in the local radio station at the time.
Oh my God.
When that story broke, and I saw the journalists' look of panic and excitement when that story dropped, and they out of the building.
That's just my entire life, all day, every day.
So I mean, terrible stuff, but I mean,
that's one you didn't do.
Yeah, that's one I didn't do. This one is not so much a personal story, but it's pretty intense in terms of what actually happened. And ooh. Yeah, my wife was telling me all about it, and I went, well, I mean, that's just craziness.
That's exciting. I'm excited. This is gonna be good. Mine's mine, when I heard it, mine was very much a what the fuck kind of story. So looks like we'll be getting a lot of that today. I think I'm going to chuck you in the deep end and make you go first. Deep end, you work in media
thanks.
And stuff like that. You're fine. tell me a story.
Okay, so you may well have heard of this, but I went through all your episodes and you've not talked about it from what I've heard. So I'm going to go with it. And fair warning, this one is about the UK's one of the UK's most infamous killers and necrophiles.
I'm making an excited face. I didn't make a noise. I just made a really excited face. This is great for an audio podcast.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah. this is the story of the Muswell Hill murderer.
I'm excited.
So our story begins... on November 23rd, 1945.
I love this, just because I listen to you tell D&D stories every other day, so this is really, I'm having a great time already.
Weirdly, I'm not certain whether the true story of this is any worse than some of the made-up stuff we have in that in our podcast, yeah. So we'll see. It's pretty bad.
Okay, sorry, I'll stop interrupting.
So, November 23rd, 1945, Dennis Nielsen is born in Fraserburgh. He is the second of three children born to Betty White, not that Betty White, a different one.
There's more than
and
one.
And Olav Nielsen. Apparently so. Spelt differently.
Not
as
cool either, probably.
No, and doesn't predate sliced bread. did you know that? Yeah. Original OG Betty White is older than sliced bread.
Why am I not surprised? Makes sense.
Dennis Nielsen's parents, their marriage wasn't a good one. His father was from Norway and very much involved in the military that escaped World War II there and all about independence in Norway. Very exciting stuff, but never really took his marriage very seriously. So in 1948, they got divorced. Three kids, and he's out of there. So Dennis has quite a nice time, according to his according to interviews that he's done with Russell Coffey's book, which is entitled Dennis Nilsson: Conversation with Britain's Most Evil Serial Killer.
Jesus Christ, that's a light title. That's a weekend read title.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one you'd leave on the coffee table, I don't think. But you know.
I definitely would.
Well, maybe you would.
I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but when I was growing up, literally in high school, my parents, which I've now figured out was my grandfather's, and he's upset that my dad's lost it, had an encyclopedia of serial killers. So it's no fucking wonder I am the way I am. Because that was like in the bookshelf next to like the, you know, you used to get the Guinness World Record books and stuff like that. It was fucking next to them.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Nice.
Very upset I don't still have
okay.
that.
Okay. Dennis had a bit of a child, you know, a reasonable childhood growing up. He was quite close to his grandfather, as apparently he says. And in 1954, he has a bit of a drama. He nearly dies.
Oh, that is
dramatic.
Nearly
swept out to sea 4 miles east of where he grew up. And he describes it as an initial panic, flailing his arms and shouting, gasping for air. And he recalled believing his grandfather was going to rescue him. And then a sense of tranquility, apparently. And then his life was saved when another young person pulled him to shore. And not long after that, Dennis's mother remarried to a builder called Andrew Scott, and the family moved further inland, I assume, to stop him throwing himself in the sea.
No more ocean for you, son.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the thought process. In the onset of puberty, Nilsson discovered he was gay. So that was it for him. But he was initially confused, ashamed. He kept his sexuality hidden from his family and friends. And apparently, he describes it, there's a lot of quotes from him in this book that I'm kind of paraphrasing, so I hope you don't mind.
Go for
it. He describes it that he was attracted to boys who had similar features to his younger sister.
Okay, that's a weird connection to make. Yeah. I wonder if he found that out or if a therapist told him that.
I think he found that out because
Oh no! Okay, I know what that noise means.
On one occasion, he sexually fondled her.
Oh, why do I hate the word fondled so much?
Yeah, I wrote it and then I regretted it.
Yeah, good decision.
Yeah, yeah, but I went with it. I steered into the skid.
It's a cringe cast.
And, well, you know. he also said that he was fondled by older boys and didn't find the experience unpleasant, was his exact words.
Didn't, so, okay, double negative, got it. That was confusing.
Yeah. and on one occasion, he even caressed his older brother, Olav Jr., of all things.
Caressed is also not a good word.
Yeah, I know. and his older brother began to mock him, assuming that he was gay, and often referred to him as hen, as in like, Scottish, you know, as for a girl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I won't do the accent because of all the accents I can do, Scottish ain't one of them.
don't ask an Australian to do
14?
Any accent ever.
Oh, now I've heard Australians do an accent and I know that's not the case. You can do them.
None of us can do them well. Can you do an Australian accent?
Now, one thing yes and no.
Because yes,
you see,
but not well.
I can do an Australian accent, but I'm fully aware that there are regional accents, and I'm only now, 16 seasons into the block, only now beginning to realise that there are differences
you,
in the way you pronounce things.
Can I just point this out to all of our listeners, and if anyone from Royal Britannia comes in here and listens to this, the amount of times James references the Australian block is insane. Is it all you watch?
I'm addicted to that show. I've got it on loop. I love that show.
Oh my God.
I'm fully addicted.
I think every conversation we've ever had, you always mention the block at least once.
I'm constantly trying to get people to watch it because I've definitely not been finding slightly questionable downloads for it online up until this point. And then recently it turned up on Amazon Prime and now I can legitimately convince my friends to watch it. So far I've got my entire family and almost all the people I work with.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I'm honestly addicted. I can't. I'm sorry.
I don't think I've ever watched a full season. We're not friends anymore.
I'm not going to convince you to watch it, but...
I will. I'll watch at least one season.
No, it's fine.
I got to finish my teenage werewolf dramas first.
Fair enough. where was I? Oh, we were talking about Dennis Nielsen, weren't we?
Yes, unfortunately.
So, we'll get through his childhood very soon, and then we'll get on to what came of it.
Okay.
You know, the reason I put it in is because some of his childhood does seem to bear, in my opinion, seems to bear some relevance to what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So age 14, he joined the army cadets and planned to join the military to escape where he was living and, I assume, to get hold of firearms. In 1961,
yeah, because you can't do that.
Fulfilled that dream. You could back in the 60s, but not anymore.
Yeah,
much like you guys, we went, we can't be trusted.
Yeah, let's one bad gun thing. Let's just remove the whole thing from the equation.
Let's just can't be trusted with them. So 1961, he does do just that. He joins the army and passed all his entrance exams and joined the Army Catering Corps. Handling of all the places you'd join. And he personally describes that as the happiest time of his life.
Oh, that's upsetting. Okay.
Yeah. So in mid-1964, he passed his initial catering exams and was assigned to the 1st Battalion Royal Fusiliers.
Did you say catering exams?
In West Germany. Yes, catering exams. Okay. Who knew? I didn't know that they had those, but sure. They do. Apparently you need exams to peel potatoes.
To Kate.
It was during his time in West Germany where he began to drink a lot.
That's a bad sign.
It's not great. During his 11-year career, he finished in the Shetland Islands in 1972, where he retired from the armed forces. In 1972, he moved to London and joined the Metropolitan Police, which lasted for just short of 8 months before he walked back out the door again.
Right.
Just enough time to get an idea of how police do things.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Does he ever say if that's on purpose or it just happened that way?
He doesn't say in what I've read, but I only skim read sort of the highlights of the
right,
book.
Okay.
So maybe he does. I don't know. But in 1975 is the next thing we hear really from what he tells us. He moves into a flat in northwest London in Melrose Avenue.
Sounds cute.
And that is where things start to take a turn
or not.
For Dennis Nielsen. Because... he's got this little flat and he seems quite content there. But for some reason, a couple of years later, he just starts killing.
Just no trigger, nothing?
Just no reason. Just goes, do you know what? One day, he just goes on December 30th, 1978, he kills 14-year-old Stephen Holmes.
Aww. Any relation to Sherlock Holmes?
I don't know.
I hope so.
I would have thought that if he was, he probably would have seen this coming because... Holmes was actually in a pub called the Crinklewood Arms.
14-year-old.
Failing to get served. Yes. Failing to get a drink because he was clearly 14.
Okay.
When Nielsen ran into him, I suppose, and invited him back to his house for drinks and to listen to music. And they had a lovely evening. It was delightful.
And that's the end of the story. Goodbye.
And that's where we all go switch off and go and cuddle a puppy. But no, Nielsen did not. Nielsen woke up the next morning and after spending what I would imagine to be an uncomfortable amount of time staring and caressing his new 14-year-old boy, who he claims to think was 17.
That doesn't make it better.
Claims. Well, it makes it legal.
But how old is he?
Oh, he was born in 19... What did we say? What was it? 1945, and this is 1970-something. 78.
So he's nearly 40. Not better.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, not better, but legal in his mind, apparently. But I don't know many 14-year-olds that look 17.
I don't know any 14-year-olds that look 17. I don't know many 17-year-olds that look 17.
No, what is that? I think it happens when I turn 30. Everyone under the age of 20 suddenly looks about 5.
It's just consistently 12. That's it. I used to say that all the time. It's For the rest of time. Everybody under the age of 18 is 12. There's nothing in between that.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. It makes me wonder how I ever thought I would get served underaged.
I did a few times.
Oh, I did. I just don't know how. I just don't know how. Oh, they knew. I could pull it off. Oh, they obviously did.
There's
mean,
no way anybody falls for it. They
looking
just
back, they just go, "Yeah, you look safe.
You don't look like you're gonna break everything. You'll be fine."
Yeah. So after an evening of drinking and listening to music, they woke up and he spent an uncomfortable amount of time looking at and caressing his new friend. And he decided that at all costs, in quote marks here, Holmes must never leave his flat. Yes. Yes. He was afraid that if he woke up, he would leave. So to stop him leaving, strangled him into unconsciousness with a tie before drowning him in a bucket of water.
This sounds like some Dharma shit.
Yeah, ugh. Yeah. No, strangled him with a tie and then drowned him in a bucket.
In a bucket.
Before that, before washing his body in
the
bath.
Oh, I hate that so much. I hate that so much.
And placing him back on the bed, masturbating twice over the body. And when rigor mortis finally set him, stuffing him under the floorboards.
Ugh. There's something yeah, about hearing killers bathing their victims. I just can't process that. It's so gross.
Well, that's because you're a rational human being who goes, "That's a dead person."
Yeah. Just the bathing. Okay.
I mean, I can make my peace with the bathing. It's the masturbating over the body that does it for me. That really really throws you. Especially twice. I mean, once is terrible, but twice?
Twice is too far.
No, once is too far.
All of it's too far.
All of it is too far. And it became a sort of spiral from there, because that was December 1978, and less than a year later, October the 11th, 1979, Nilsson struck again. This time attempting to murder a student from Hong Kong named Andrew Ho, who he met in another pub, lured back to his flat with the promise of sex, attempted to strangle Ho, but this time, Ho managed to escape.
Ooh.
Reported the incident to police, and Nilsson was questioned, and Ho didn't press charges.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So he's known to the police now.
Yep.
As someone who attempted to strangle someone.
Mm-hmm.
December 3rd, the same year, he strangles a Canadian tourist, Kenneth Ockenden, 23, who was on tour of England visiting relatives. Yet again, they met in another pub. Pubs were his
place. He needs to stay out of pubs.
I think we'd, yeah. Ruining pubs for the rest of us. When he found out that Ockenden was a tourist, he offered to show him all the London landmarks and... because it was the 70s, he accepted.
Oh, the 70s stressed me out.
Shady-looking stranger. they stopped off at an off-license to pick up some drink. I think you'd call it a bottle-o.
Yeah. Yep. Well done. Bottle-o or...
Hey.
Like, we need an Ari in here. What do Americans say? Liquor store.
Liquor store. I think that's what they call it.
Yeah.
So they stopped off there to buy some rum, apparently. Who knew? And some whiskey and beer.
Oh, that's the worst.
That makes a cocktail that you want to drink.
Oh, I hate that.
That's not a drink anyway.
Why does that make me feel worse than the bathing? Beer and whiskey and rum all together.
It makes you more uncomfortable, I think. I don't know why.
It's just something about the textures.
Yeah, I think it was bad with the whiskey and rum, but then you throw in the beer as well.
Oh, my tongue feels bad now.
Yeah.
Thanks. I hate it.
Sorry. And what's even worse is that Ockenden insisted on sharing the bill for paying for the drinks.
Oh, no. He's Canadian, right?
Yeah. Yeah, makes he sense. Is. Well, was. Nelson says he can't remember the precise moment he strangled Ockenden, but recalls that he strangled the young man with the cord of his own headphones.
Rude.
While they were listening to music.
Aww.
He says he dragged the youth across the floor with the wire wrapped around his neck and strangled him before pouring himself a glass of rum and continuing to listen to music on the headphones.
Oh my God, there's part of this dude's brain missing.
Yeah. The following day, Nielsen bought a Polaroid camera.
Oh no!
Oh yes. And photographed Ockenden's body in various suggestive positions. He then laid Ockenden's corpse spread-eagled above him on the bed as he watched TV for several hours before wrapping the body in plastic bags and, this is going to be the chorus for this episode, shoved him under the floorboards.
Hold on, can you clarify spread-eagle above him on the bed? Did he have like a poster bed or something?
I think it was kind of like behind him.
Right.
So he was kind of like between.
Oh, Jesus. Also, can I just say, yeah. I know it's an audio podcast, but we're doing this with video, and every time James is about to say something horrific, he stares at me before he says it.
I do, I'm sorry. Sorry.
Dramatic effect. Such a drama queen.
I know. I'm just used to it. It's the drama-ness.
That's
something
a
like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Floorboards. That's a terrible trend.
On several occasions across the next fortnight, Nelson disinterred Ockenden's body to sit him alongside him on an armchair as he watched TV and drank alcohol. I see you're biting things now. I mean, I did warn you that this was going to be bad.
No, I know. That's so fucking creepy. You hear about stories of, like, this actually happened in my city that I lived in WA, is that there was a woman whose husband died in the living room, mm-hmm. and she couldn't cope with the fact that he was actually dead, so she never reported the body, never called anyone in, so she just lived as normal with him decaying in the living room. That, to me, yep. is sad. It's not terrifying.
It is,
this dude physically picked up somebody that he'd already killed and essentially buried or hidden under the floorboards and then put him back on a chair. Why does it make it so much worse? I hate it.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Yeah. Next year, May 17th, 1980, Nielsen finds Martin Duffy, 16-year-old, sleeping rough at Euston Railway Station, and takes him home for a meal and somewhere to sleep. Nielsen then strangled him, sat on his chest, and dragged the youth into the kitchen before drowning him in the sink.
He's not very consistent, is he?
Before bathing his body.
No!
Was a lot of strangling and drowning and bathing. He then put the body first on the kitchen chair and then on the bed in which he had strangled him before repeatedly kissing and caressing the body.
I wish you didn't say fondling again.
After he masturbated over him and after 2 days, stuffed the body under the floorboard.
Oh my God, his house must fucking stink. Wait, he lives in a flat.
Yes, ground floor flat this time at the moment.
Wait, so has it been the same flat for all of the murders?
It's the same flat at the moment.
So he's got three bodies under the floorboards in his flat.
Yes, yes he does.
And it's attached to another flat.
Oh, yeah, upstairs, yeah, yeah.
And that, okay, no, mm-hmm. All right.
Yep. Following Duffy's murder, Nielsen began to kill more frequently. Before the end of 1980, he'd killed a further 5 victims and attempted to murder another one. Only one of these victims has been identified, though.
Ooh.
And that's 26-year-old William David Sutherland. At the end of 1980, Nielsen obviously realised he was getting rid of a stockpile under his floorboards because he had decided that it was time to clear house. So
Running out of room, dude.
Yeah, well, he was running out of floorboards, I suspect. He went into the communal garden, set a bonfire, and burned all 6 dissected bodies, apparently.
Okay.
And to hide the smell of the burning bodies, I mean, it says six in the book, but I don't know what he's done with some of the other bodies, but it says 6. To hide the smell, he burnt a tyre at the same time.
Oh, that's cheating.
And the neighbours came out to watch.
Oh my God, imagine finding out later that you went and watched your neighbour burn like tyres and bonfire to find out it was like 6 essentially kids. Oh my God, never go to a fucking bonfire again.
Yeah. Well, he's not stupid though. He did wait until it had all burnt to ashes and then just combed through it all to find any leftover burnt bones and found that one of the skulls hadn't burnt, so he smashed it up with a rake.
Okay, not praising a criminal, but that's the smartest thing I've ever heard of any of them doing so far.
Oh, well, it's out there. We've got through that lot. In January 1981, he murders a young Scot in another... Well, he meets in another pub. And 2 more men in February and April and hid their bodies in the newly emptied space under the floorboards.
He's escalating as fuck. Wait, hold on. He burnt them so that he could have more space. He wasn't moving house.
Yes. No, not yet. He just cleared out so he could get some more bodies in.
Okay.
September 18th, 1981. Malcolm Barlow. He finds Malcolm Barlow, a 24-year-old, slumped in the doorway of a shop and calls an ambulance for him. Nice guy. Next day, Barlow tracks Nielsen down to thank him. Nielsen strangles him and buries him under the floorboards.
What a cunt!
Yeah.
Are you serious? That pretty serious? Much sums him up.
Yeah, genuinely.
What? I just... Oh, man. That infuriates me. What?
It's the fact that he went to the effort to help.
Why
the guy.
Would you bother? Yeah. Because what if he just never came back? He's like, no, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
All right.
Yeah. November 1981, so 2 months later, Nielsen moved out of his flat in Melrose Avenue into an attic flat with no garden access.
Don't
live
in
Gardens.
An attic. Don't be friends with people that live in an attic.
And a few months later, for a few months... He doesn't kill anyone.
That's nice of him.
Good times. Yeah, it's nice of him. Moves. He's getting settled in.
He's got to unpack.
Then in March 19... he does. Took him a while. Then in March 1982, Nielsen attempts to strangle John Howlett, a man he met in a pub in Leicester Square. Nielsen lured him back to his new flat for a drinking contest. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck.
During their evening together, Nielsen tries to strangle him, and there's a struggle, and Howlett nearly strangles Nielsen.
Ooh.
In fact, Nielsen spends the next 2 weeks with finger marks around his neck. But Nielsen just about overpowers him and strangles him. And then, noticing that Howlett has started breathing again, drowns him in the bath.
Okay, so... Again, not trying to... That is the most logical place to drown somebody.
It is.
Not a bucket.
I mean, so far we've had a bucket or a kitchen sink.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
At least he hasn't tried the toilet yet.
It's not... I wouldn't recommend it, but that is...
No, don't do it, but...
I mean, you can't drown people in toilets in the UK. That's the thing.
Oh, wait, have we had this conversation?
It's been on our Discord, yeah.
Yeah. Why does this sound really...
There's like no water in our toilets.
Interesting.
There's like just a little bit with a little tiny opening.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, toilet talk. Yay!
That's the crossover.
Then, in May 1982... this is a long list. I'm very sorry.
It's not your fault. You didn't do it.
Nielsen invites a drag queen, Carl Stotter, back to his new flat in Cranley Gardens, assuring his guests there will be no sexual activity. They drink before falling asleep, and Stotter falls asleep on an open sleeping bag that Nielsen's laid out for him. He's later awoken to find himself being strangled by Nielsen, who is whispering, "Stay still."
Oh my God. I hate how wide your eyes were when you whispered that as well.
In subsequent testimony, this suggests he didn't die. At Nilsson's trial, Stotter stated he initially believed Nilsson was trying to free him from the zip of the sleeping bag before he returned to a state of unconsciousness. He then vaguely recalled hearing the sound of running water before realizing he was being immersed in water and that Nilsson was attempting to drown him. After briefly succeeding in raising his head above the water, Stotter gasped the words, "No more, please, no more." Nilsson again submerged Stotter's head beneath the water, and believing he had killed Stotter, Nilsson seated the youth in his armchair. Nilsson then realized Stotter was still breathing. So he rubbed Stotter's limbs and heart and to return circulation to him, and basically gaslighted him into believing that he had had a seizure and he was saving his life.
What a fucking cunt! I know I've said it already, but Jesus Christ!
He then, a few days later, walked him to a train station and informed the youth that he hoped they'd meet again. Stotter did not go to the police.
Oh my God, no.
Yep.
Did he believe him? Does it, like...
Well, he gave testimony against him, so I'm guessing not, but...
Oh, wow.
He was clearly so... he apparently believed that it could have been a nightmare.
That's a hell of a fucking nightmare.
He was fully gaslighted. In January the following year, 1983, Nilsson kills his final victim, 20-year-old Stephen Sinclair. Sinclair was last seen by acquaintances in the company of Nilsson walking in the direction of a tube station. Nilsson's flat. At Nilsson's flat, Sinclair fell asleep in a drug and alcohol-induced stupor. In an armchair as Nilsson sat, listening to the rock opera Tommy. Nilsson approached Sinclair, knelt down before him and said, "Oh, Stephen, here we go again," before strangling Sinclair with a combination of a tie and a rope.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What a monster.
Following his ritual of bathing the body, Nilsson laid Sinclair's body on his bed and applied talcum powder to the body, and then arranged three mirrors around the bed before laying naked alongside the dead one. Several hours later... yeah. Several hours later, Stephen's head turned towards him before kissing the youth's body on the forehead, saying, "Good night, Stephen." Nilsson then fell asleep alongside the body.
It's the mirrors and the talcum powder are just, it's just so fucked up.
Now, all these bodies that he killed in his new flat were dissected and stuffed into plastic bags and stored in either his wardrobe or a tea chest.
This is some Dahmer shit.
Beneath his bath. Yeah. He filled his flat with all sorts of air fresheners, and he sprayed loads of bug spray everywhere to make sure that there weren't insects.
Yeah, because that's going
to
work.
But it stank. It stank. So in order to try and clear up this stink of several dead people, he started flushing the dissected remains down the toilet.
That's going to cause problems.
It's almost like you know what's going to happen, because on February the 4th, 1983, Nilsson wrote a letter of complaint to his estate agents complaining that the drains were blocked.
Excuse me. Sorry, I'm having an issue. My drains are blocked. Oh, I wonder what it could be. It's definitely not body parts, I promise. Just
no,
don't look.
Definitely
when
not.
When the plumbers come, just tell them not to look.
So... Nilsson's murders were first discovered by a Dynarod employee. Now, Dynarod are people, I don't know if you have them there, but they are people that effectively, they snake drains. They clear drains.
We just That's call them do. Plumbers.
Yeah, well, they literally go out to the big street ones and everything. They're called. There's a company called Dynarod.
Okay.
Michael Cataran was the plumber on call, and he went to the call out from the estate agent to go and check out the drains. So upon opening the drain cover at the side of the house, Cataran discovered the drain was packed with a flesh-like substance.
Ugh.
And numerous small bones of an unknown origin. Katerin reported that his suspicion, he reported his suspicions to his supervisor, Gary Wheeler, and as Katerin had arrived at the property in the evening, he decided to postpone any further investigation until the next morning.
Yeah, give him time to clean up. Go on.
I'm sure you're reading ahead, because at 7:30 the following morning, Katerin and Wheeler turned up to Cranley Gardens, by which time the drain had been cleared.
I fucking hate people sometimes.
This aroused the suspicion of both men. And on further investigation up the pipe leading to the attic floor flat, they found more scraps of flesh and four bones, which they suspected looked like the bones from a human hand. They both called the police.
Can you imagine? I just had this image of like bones and flesh, like just on like a floorboard, but it's like giving the finger.
Just one middle finger, yeah. Just there.
That's the ghost being like, I can't do much, but I can do something.
When the police investigated, the remains that were found, they've discovered a piece of flesh that they concluded had been from a human neck and still contained ligature marks on it.
Whoa!
From where they'd been strangled. So, when the police learned that all the stuff had basically come from the top floor flat and that Nielsen was the person renting the top floor flat, Detective Chief Inspector Peter Jay and two colleagues waited outside the house for him to come home from work, and they introduced themselves to him and said they'd like to come up to his flat to take a look around. Which they did, and the three officers went into flat and they reported that they noted immediately the stench of rotting flesh.
Yeah, you can't just get that out. It doesn't work like that.
And yeah, I realise I've been talking now for about 40
minutes.
That's
all right.
So I'm going to jump off a little bit
of
description.
Mine's shorter, so it's fine. I had a feeling you might go for a bit longer.
Sorry, I'm not used to your timings. And to be fair, we overrun everything on Roll Britannia. So.
Yeah.
The three officers went in and they noted immediately the stench of rotting flesh. Nielsen questioned further as to why the police were interested in his drains, to which he was informed the blockage had been caused by human remains. Nielsen feigned shock and stated, "Good grief, how awful." In response, Jay just replied, "Don't mess about, where's the rest of the
body?" Don't mess about! Oh, how English, I love it.
Don't mess about. Nielsen responded calmly, admitting that the remainder of the body could be found in the two plastic bags in the wardrobe. Didn't even argue. Just then, they're over there, mate.
He's like, "Nah, fuck it, I know I'm a shit actor, don't worry about it."
Yeah, Nielsen said that he would tell them everything, but at the police station. And when they interviewed him back at the police station, they asked him, under caution, they asked him where the if it was one or two people that were in these remains, to which his response, staring out the window, was 15 or 16 since 1978.
Oh, my God.
Very calmly, just, yeah.
No wonder they wrote a book about this idiot. Jesus.
Yep. That evening, Detective Superintendent Chambers, accompanied by DCIJ and Professor Bowen, went to Cranley Gardens, where the plastic bags were removed from the wardrobe and taken to the Hornsey Mortuary. One bag was found to contain two dissected torsos, one of which had been vertically dissected, and a shopping bag contained various internal organs. The second bag contained a human skull, almost completely devoid of flesh, and a severed head, and a torso with arms attached.
How big are these shopping bags?
Hands missing. I think these were bin bags, and then there were shopping bags inside
right,
with
okay,
other bits.
Right, okay, makes more sense.
The heads were found to have been subjected to moist heat. I don't really know what that means, but ew.
He's had the heater on.
Gross. Nielsen was... On October 24th, 1983, Nielsen was charged with 6 counts of murder and 2 counts of attempted murder and was tried at the Old Bailey. He pleaded not guilty on all charges.
Of course he did.
Yep. No, November 4th, 1983, he was jailed for life. and May 12th, 2018, died at the age of 72.
Oh, fuck, he only just died. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy was another level of mental.
What a compost heap. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just don't kill people, but also don't store them in bags in your cupboard.
Just, oh my God. I can't believe that. And he would have stunk as a person too. Like that shit doesn't, it's in, especially in your wardrobe, all your clothes are going to smell like that.
Well, I imagine he had another wardrobe for clothes. I mean, like, this is the body wardrobe, this is the clothes wardrobe, you know?
I don't...
Well, you would hope.
...know if I would give him that much credit.
The question I've got is, his flat must have constantly smelled of dead bodies. How did he get so many people to come in?
Fuck politeness, man. People would be so polite. Like, I am the opposite of that. If I walk in somewhere and it's, like, filthy or I'm uncomfortable, I'm gonna fucking leave. Like, but people are so like,
well, yeah,
have this ingrained need to be polite that like you walk in and if somebody's house smells like 15 rotting bodies in a cupboard, they'll just be like, oh, okay, I just won't mention it. I'll breathe through my mouth until I get strangled and then also become one of the bodies. If somebody's house smells like dead people, don't go in.
Yeah, that's a hard, we'll have that as a hard, fast rule now. If the house smells of dead people, don't go in.
Perfect.
That's just a simple one.
Yes, rule number
one. Easy to remember. Yeah.
You'll be fine, as long as you remember that. You'll be all right. Jesus Christ.
The most important rule.
That's insane.
As before, don't get in other people's vans. It's if the house smells of dead people, don't go in.
Yeah, it's but that's, you need to know that rule after you've gotten, successfully gotten out of the van alive.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I mean, you say
unless
that,
you take
but
your own
we're
van.
Always told don't get in other people. We're always told don't get in strangers' cars, but now that's what we do, like, all the time. I mean, Uber, hello, I'll get into your car.
Yeah. This looks about right. Jesus Christ, that's insane. Yeah. I love that he was caught because he tried to flush it down the toilet, which to me is just such... He was doing, again, not giving a serial killer credit or anything, but... Logically, you know, objectively, whatever, he was doing well until that point.
What's the word? He reported the blockage.
Yeah, he did. Well, he doesn't know
how
to fix
it. He dubbed himself in.
He doesn't know how to fix it. He didn't know what to do. But, like, the tire, the rake with the skull, that's all quite criminally intelligent actions.
Yeah, yeah.
Going,
scary,
I'm just
going
to pour an entire multiple worths of people down a drain, down a toilet, is not that intelligent. Something happened.
He lost something in the move.
In the move, it was the house. The apartment gives him his power.
He left it there. Yeah, it was Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. Thank you for that. I hate it. Okay.
Nice.
I'm going to be uncomfortable all day. All right. This is Bruce Pardo and the Covina Massacre.
It's got massacre in the title. I think we're off to a start.
January 2006, Bruce Pardo marries Sylvia Ortega. It wouldn't be long before there were reports that the marriage was already crumbling as Pardo was thought to be controlling and restrictive with money. So there's not a lot about his life before this marriage. He just... worked, you know, did normal people things. He didn't have like a criminal record, normal people things, didn't have a criminal record, wasn't very interesting, whatever. So there were stories that he refused to open a joint account with his wife after they got married and that her three children from a previous relationship were not his responsibility to finance and she had to take care of them with her own finances.
I mean, that's a red flag right there. Won't open joint account with wife. I mean, that's sus.
Yeah. Also, talk about that shit before you get married. Anyway. And this is 2006, so it's not even that long ago. Like, it's not like it was the 60s or the 70s or something. So, straight up, he's a giant douche. June 2008, Pardo was... You like that?
I do, yeah.
Pardo was ordered to pay nearly $2,000 a month in support... what happened to me then? $2,000 a month in support payments by a divorce court ruling. So their marriage didn't even really last a year by the time that she was like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And only a month later, in July, his support payments were suspended due to hardship. Pardo got fired from his job as an electrical engineer because he was billing false hours to the company. So there are reports that he started doing it because it doesn't say how long he was doing it, but they were saying that it became more obvious because he was just trying to give the ex-wife money that he wasn't even really his. Like, he wasn't earning it.
Yeah.
So he was like, whatever, you can have that. I'm keeping all my shit because he's a selfish trash bag.
Well, a lot of people that bill their own hours, I mean, I'm sure some people don't, but I'm sure a lot of people put in the odd extra hour to fluff. But I mean, there's fluffing the books a little bit, and then there's cooking them, you know?
Yeah. Well, he worked for a jet propulsion system. So he was like, it was a pretty big sort of company. And I just don't know why he thought that. It must have been very obvious. Like, he must have just not been coming in at all.
What? Yeah, because, I mean, yeah. I mean, what?
He's like, I work 26 hours this day.
Do you know, I would believe that he'd said that.
Probably. But yeah, put it, how many hours did you work from this, in this 24-hour period? 29. Okay, sure. We'll figure that out later. So a week out from Christmas, the divorce was finally finalized. So everything got settled on the 18th of December. And Pardo was ordered to pay his ex-wife Sylvia $10,000 as a settlement. She also got to keep her wedding ring, the family dog, and she was living with her parents. There are lots of quotes out there about things that sort of he had been overheard saying. And things like, she's taking me to the cleaners, she's living rent-free with her parents, you know, despite the fact that she's taking care of three children. She's gone on a gambling trip to Vegas and all. None of this stuff was really substantiated, but this is all shit that he was saying about his ex-wife. Christmas Eve, 2008, the Ortega family and friends were gathered at Alicia and Joseph Ortega's home in Covina, Los Angeles. The party had about 25 attendees, mostly family and close friends of the Ortegas. So Alicia and Joseph were Sylvia, the ex-wife's parents. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I got you. I'm with you. I'm
building
I'm
a family tree. Okay. Around 11:30
like
p.m.
I'm going to draw it.
You're going to draw the tree. Around 11:30 p.m., Bruce Pardo knocked on the door to the party dressed as Santa. That's nice.
Oh,
it's not nice. His 8-year-old niece, Katrina... I apologize in advance. Yusuf Polsky? I think. I'm sorry. I'm Australian and uncultured. Okay. So she's 8 year old, answers the door to find, she runs towards the door, sees her uncle dressed as Santa, and he fired a semi-automatic handgun directly at her.
Oh my God.
Injuring her severely in the face. Spoiler, she doesn't die. An 8-year old survives a shot to the face. And I looked at pictures of her now. She's fucking gorgeous. Wow. Like, she is just, oh man, she's insane. There's all sorts of like articles and stuff.
I'll come back to you at night though.
Yeah, for sure. Well, she was also, I think, her school had a school shooting and stuff like that while she was in high school as well. So the poor fucking thing. But
this is why we can't have guns, because people can't be trusted.
Yeah, this is why we can't have guns. But yeah, so I'll just tell you now, the 8-year-old, she's fine.
Yay.
So Pardo entered the home with 4 semi-automatic weapons and a homemade flamethrower.
So 4 and a flamethrower?
The flamethrower was wrapped as if it was a present. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yep. Dressed as Santa. What? And the flamethrower was wrapped like
it's
a present.
The worst Santa.
That's the worst Santa, man. I've ever heard of. Yeah. Yeah, the dressed as Santa thing. Like,
that's real dark, isn't it?
And then he even went to the extra to wrap the flamethrower as a present.
I mean, that shows some really odd brain activity going on there. Just going, I made a flame. You know, there's dressed as Santa to get in, and then there's disguised the flamethrower as a present.
Yeah.
That's just another level, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So Pardo then shot at whoever he saw in the home. did not give a shit who he was shooting at, if he knew them, if he didn't. Some of the evidence that would be found in the home afterwards would suggest that Pardo, while indiscriminately shooting at the attendees, he would also stand over and execution-style shoot the others to make sure they were dead, likely those who he had immense rage towards, like his ex-wife. So he was just shooting at whoever was around, but if he managed to hit or find someone that he had a lot of anger towards, that was more of a, he would stand over the top of them in execution style, make sure they were dead. After Prado, I've changed the spelling in here so many times. It goes between Pardo and Prado because my computer hates me. After he was done with the shootings, he opened the wrap package and revealed the flamethrower. The flamethrower expelled racing fuel and then set it alight. So this is something that he could sort of jerry-rig with his electrical engineer knowledge from jet propulsion systems.
Wow.
One of the partygoers was able to escape to the neighbors and call 911 for help. The Ortega home was engulfed in flames, with some of the flames being as high as 40 to 50 feet, which is about 15 meters. It took over an hour and a half and 80 firefighters to extinguish the blaze.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's a lot of firepower. Fire combating power. That's the wrong. Yep.
Yeah.
English is my first language. Fire's a
really big deal for you guys, isn't it?
Fuck, man. It's so bad. So at the start of 2020, I don't know how publicized it got, but at the start of 2020, we had fires so bad that
your whole
like,
country was on fire. Yeah.
Well, my whole state, I'm in Melbourne. We had smoke clouds so big you can see them from New Zealand. Like, whoa, smoke was covering parts of New Zealand because it would travel over that way. It was that thick and that bad. And there were days where, like, people just couldn't go into work because there was so much heavy smoke and, like, ash still traveling from, like, a 70 to 100K away fire that was so big that, yeah, people in Melbourne and in, like, the CBD couldn't see shit, so a lot of people couldn't drive or go anywhere, and it was insane. And I'm asthmatic too, so that sucked. But then people
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I forgot about the fires because of COVID. I was like, this year sucks. COVID sucks. Yeah. They're like, and the fires. And I was like, oh, yeah, and the fires.
We had Brexit for that.
Oh, yeah, true. Our bushfires, your Brexit.
Slightly less devastating for your
Well, Brexit affects us too.
Still pretty bad. Yeah.
It affects us too because if you guys do, I've stopped paying attention. Did you guys separate or not? Well, you don't know yet.
Oh, yeah, we will do on January 1st, yeah.
January 1st?
Yeah, it's really good. Wow. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to having fewer rights. It's so good.
Yeah, because we could use our Australian passports, because I've got an English passport as well, and we could also use our Australian passports to get the same way around as you guys could. And my friend's getting married in Germany, like, end of next year, so now I'm going to have to do, like, a visa and shit. It's going to be weird.
Yeah, it's great. But on the other side, we might be doing this Kanzuk thing. So
I've not been paying that much attention. You can explain it to me later.
It's like free travel and trade between us, you guys, New Zealand and Canada. It's like the Commonwealth back together again.
Commonwealth party. Okay, except everything's really
Sorry,
far away.
Carry on. Yeah.
Okay, so, took over an hour and a half, 80 firefighters to extinguish the blaze. The attack killed 9 people. They died from either the shooting or the fire. Some they weren't able to tell. A lot of the remains were identified by dental records because the fire had gone on for that long. 3 more were injured. Katrina, the 8-year-old who was shot in the face with severe but non-life-threatening injuries. A 16-year-old girl was shot and wounded in the back. And a 20-year-old woman who suffered a broken ankle because she jumped out of the second floor window.
Good choice.
What a badass. Yeah. Isn't that great?
That is some action movie stuff, that is.
Yeah, I read that and I was like, fuck yes, you go. Well done. So the 9 victims are as follows. Sylvia Ortega Pardo, who is his ex-wife, she's 43. Alicia Ortega, who is 70, her mother. Joseph Ortega, who is 80, her father. Charles Ortega, who was 49, Sherry Ortega, who was 45, James Ortega, 51, Therese Ortega, 52, Alicia Ortega Oritz, 46, who is Pardo's sister-in-law, and Michael again, I'm sorry for the names. I think it's Ortiz, actually. Michael Ortiz, who is 17, who is his nephew. Wow. So those were the victims, and they were either from shooting or from the fire. Some were just from the fire, and three were like a combination. So like they'd been shot, they couldn't move, and then they died from smoke inhalation, something like that. But they didn't really specify which was which. Yeah. So after the attack, Pardo went back to his rental car, shed his Santa suit, and began driving. The vehicle, a blue Dodge Caliber, was found about a block away from Pardo's brother's home, who was not home at the time, so he was not involved in any way.
We all know that Santa doesn't drive a blue Dodge, so that would have been a dead giveaway.
That's the episode title.
If he'd been
title.
In a sleigh, you'd have got
That's
away with
it. That's the episode title, Santa doesn't drive a blue Dodge. fuck, where was I? The vehicle...
Sorry.
So it was found a block away from his brother's place. When it was found, the vehicle was found to be rigged with a Santa suit covering another homemade incendiary. So it was another flamethrower, but it was rigged to, if somebody took the suit and like tried to remove anything, it was going to blow up. So it would definitely destroy the car and any people remotely close to it if the suit was touched at all. They found 4 13-round handguns. All were empty, and another 200 rounds of ammunition.
There's so many rounds.
I know, it's just so much. So the bomb squad fired an explosive into the vehicle because that was the only way they could ensure that it was all destroyed in a controlled way because they couldn't remove it. So they just blew it up.
Well, I mean, that's the way to do that. That's a good day at work though, isn't it?
Yeah, blow up a car in a residential street.
When you get to
just hope everybody's okay.
Blow up something full of explosives. What a day.
Yeah. And you can actually see pictures.
I guess everyone was cleared out, but...
Yeah, for sure. You can actually see pictures of the car when they found it. It's on Murderpedia. I'll post probably the car or something like that, maybe on the Instagram. But you can see the car as they found it with the Santa suit, and you can see all these wires and like explosive shit underneath. And then they have a picture of after the bomb squad detonated it, and it's just a car shell. Like,
wow.
It was high fucking powered. It's insane. So it was initially believed that Pardo intended to flee to Canada by plane, as he had bought an airline ticket with Air Canada.
He's not walking.
No, he's not going to go for a little stroll. however, it was discovered that the flight was from LA to, I think it's Malone, Illinois. So it was with Air Canada, but it wasn't going to Canada.
What?
Yeah, and
what?
In Illinois, he did actually have a friend who did visited in October, and he said he told him he was going to visit again. They weren't sure if maybe this was to like throw the police off of where he was going, or if he was just actually going to be stupid enough to just get on a flight to a different state and hang out with his friend.
I'm guessing he was.
But also as if like his friend wouldn't be like, oh, you just murdered like your entire family and some of your extended family. Yeah,
yeah,
no,
sure,
you can hang
in,
out.
Yeah.
The spare room's second door on the left. Let me know if you need more towels.
Do you want a foot rub, you know?
What kind of friends do you have? eventually, they also found $17,000 in cash on Pardo. I keep saying his name wrong. I'm sorry. Pardo cling-wrapped to his legs inside a girdle.
I mean, that sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah, it really does.
It sounds like a lot of...
Like, I've had cling wrap...
Were they Aussie dollars or US dollars?
It actually doesn't say. I assume US. I don't know why they'd be Australian dollars.
Because, I mean, if they were the Aussie ones, they'd be sweaty.
Yeah, that happens.
You're all...
You know, there are some...
You've got plastic money like us now.
So some of our beach bars and stuff like that... This is so gross. I'm sorry. Some of our beach bars in Australia have signs that says no boob money because...
Oh my God, I want one of those signs. Best sign ever.
No boob.
No boob money.
Yeah, because like when you go to the beach and stuff like that, girls don't... Like they just put cash down their bras.
They put pockets in swim shoes.
Yeah, exactly. They just put cash and stuff down their bras, but it's plastic, so yeah, it can get sweaty and salty and
Claggy.
Oh, that's the worst word you've said all night.
Claggy.
Yeah.
Thanks, yeah.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, and I was thinking about this, having stuff cling wrapped to the inside of your legs. Like, I recently just got new tattoos on my shins, and you cling wrap them when you leave, and I could barely walk, and it wasn't like it was holding anything up. It was just uncomfortable. $17,000.
That's a lot of dollars as well. I mean, he must have been walking like he was, like he just got off a horse.
He's just waddling. He's like, no, it's a Santa suit. Don't worry about
legs
it.
Legs fully straight apart, you know.
So thankfully his escape did not go at all as planned. So whatever he had planned, if it was to go to his mates, if it was to go to Canada, if it was to go to Vegas and spend $17,000 on nothing in particular, he had suffered massive third-degree burns on his arms from the flamethrower, which, good, because you're an idiot. And he must have known that his injuries were not going to allow him to escape. Either he was going to die from shock from them, or he would have had to go to a hospital and been caught. Whatever it was, he knew he was dead in the water. And he was found dead in his brother's home with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head.
Oh, my God.
I'm just watching your reactions.
What?
Yeah. I mean, so he must have... either he had an escape plan and he realized that...
Didn't achieve anything.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, he must have realized that, like, I'm not going to get out of this like I thought I was going to. And then, yeah, he shot himself
in
the head.
Didn't even try.
Could have tried. But they went and they inspected his home. I don't have notes on this. This is just shit that I was reading. They went and inspected his home, and they reckon it was essentially like, if it had caught fire for any whatever reason, it would have decimated a really large area of his block because of how much fuel and like bomb making stuff and just ammunition and black powder and
oh, damn.
All sorts of shit. Like, he was just, it was just full of it. It was insane. And that's the story of what the newspapers started calling Killer Santa, or the Santa Gunman, the trash bag nightmare Bruce Pardo.
Merry Christmas, kids.
Yeah. Fuck, man. Just the Santa suit, the Santa, why? Fuck you.
That's super. I mean,
wrap the flamethrower as a present,
dark,
sure.
But it's the
good way to
the
hide
flamethrower
it.
Up. That's, well, yeah, I'll give you.
It's the combination of the two. Wrapping the flamethrower and dressed as Santa is so much. Dressed as Santa is too much on its own.
It's
you
so
take
much
away
worse
the
than
Santa, and it's, yeah, it makes sense. It's just like he just wanted to traumatize and kill as many people as possible.
The combination is definitely worse than one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, those are our, that's my Christmas murder.
Yay.
Thank you so much for doing this and being part of our Xmas Guessmas variety season. Holy shit, I got it right. Did I get it right?
Hey.
I think I got it right. Hey, I didn't even think about it that time.
Nice.
So I hope it wasn't
five times quickly.
No, I can't say anything five times quickly. I can't say anything quickly. I just can't speak, really. I have a podcast. Thank you so much. This has been great. I hope it wasn't too traumatic for you to have to do that. Hopefully,
well, I did learn more
you.
About murder today than I anticipated.
You're welcome. Learning.
I hear a fair bit of it, though.
Well, I mean, you'd already listened to all of the other episodes, so.
Yeah, I had. Some of them are really creepy.
Yeah.
Like really creepy. I still want to know what happened at that lighthouse from episode
Lizard
one.
People, we've talked about this.
Yes, I know, but. It can't always
it
be
It can always
people.
Be lizard people. It can and it is. That's if anybody doesn't follow me on Twitter, that's what my Twitter handle is Catastrophe IRL, but my name is It's Always Lizard People. It's been like that for months. All right. So, yes, I don't know how to do these. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. You know where you can find us. Head to our Instagram, Dead Obsessed Podcast, and there's a link tree with literally everything you could ever want and then some extra shit on there. Send us your hometown or your, I think we're calling them your city stories, for weird, wonderful, wacky, crazy. Doesn't have to be murder. Doesn't have to be paranormal. Just shit that is not normal. I guess, is the thing there. And James, where can people find you?
Oh, pretty much everywhere you find podcasts, but we've got Twitter at Roll Britannia, Instagram at roll.britannia. There is a Facebook page if that does it for you. We're getting a TikTok soon as well, so that's really exciting.
Oh my God, I had to quit TikTok.
It's a time sink, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just steals your life away. We've got loads coming out. We've got a merch store now as well. I think you should get one because I definitely think that people should be buying t-shirts that say it's always lizard people.
I have made some designs. I've just not put anything up there because I'm terrible at it. But I do have a t-shirt that says Renegade Priests on it.
Brilliant. Yeah.
We'll have to get...
We've got our Christmas special coming out as well soon.
Oh, so Christmas really merch.
On the 20...
Oh, yeah.
23rd and 24th, our Christmas special comes
That's
out.
That's awesome. So. And Robert Tanya's currently doing a murder mystery section of the podcast, and it's very intriguing. It's very frustrating, but it's wonderful. So if you like D&D or just kind of nonsense, I guess... Definitely.
There's a lot of nonsense.
It's a lot of nonsense. Definitely go there.
To be honest, as D&D goes, it's not a very hardcore D&D. It's D&D, but mostly just people not being very good at it.
It's fabulous. It's the kind of D&D that I really enjoy and really like to play as well. It's not a lot of like rules lawyering and stuff like that. And also listening to them just in character yell at each other is fucking fabulous. Yeah. And James's voices. He is very good at voices and accents. It's wonderful.
You'll have to train me up in a good Australian accent.
All right.
I can bring in a quality Aussie character into the show.
Yes.
That's what we'll do.
Oh my God. Oh.
I need some accent coaching.
Yes. Okay. I'm in. I'm done. I'm down. That's great. This is going to be fun.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening, and I will see you next time. I don't know. Bye.
Bye.
I never know how to end this fucking thing. This is Dead Obsessed.